Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, an update on the former immigration detainee charged with a shocking home invasion in Perth, plus a Victorian MP has been dumped for allegedly inappropriate behaviour towards women, some news on interest rates, I'll tell you whether it's good or bad, and Jerry Seinfeld has had an epic whinge about political correctness. And I'll leave you today with the latest on South Sydney coach Jason Demetriou's future at the club. In our top story today, more on the detainee accused of a horrifying home invasion in Perth.
The federal government is under pressure to explain why an immigration detainee who allegedly assaulted a Perth grandmother was released in the first place.
Yesterday we spoke about a shocking home invasion in the Perth suburb of Girraween, allegedly committed by a former immigration detainee that had been released as part of that infamous High Court decision last year. Federal politics reporter Dan Jervis-Bardi is on the line from Canberra. Dan, the Prime Minister has now commented on this case.
Yeah, so the Prime Minister was asked about what you described and what is a shocking case. And the Prime Minister, he effectively said, look, the thoughts go out to the couple, the thoughts of all Australians are with the couple, so extending his sympathy to them. He didn't elaborate beyond that. He noted the matter was still before the courts and obviously a subject of a police investigation, so limited in that sense of what he can say. But he did express his sympathy for what was a horrific attack, and the images of which has been circulated and sort of splashed across newspaper front pages today.
Yeah. And Majid Jamshidi Dukoshkin faced court on Monday in Perth, charged with his alleged involvement in this terrifying attack, in which it's alleged he was one of three men who conned their way into this elderly couple's home, pretending to be police officers, before beating the 73-year-old Nanette Simons and stealing $200,000 worth of jewellery. What do we know about Jamshidi Dukoshkin?
So we know this man was in immigration detention. He was one of the cohort of non-citizens that were freed from detention after that landmark High Court ruling last year. He's a 43-year-old. He was born in Kuwait. We know that he was in court in February, and he was in court because he had repeatedly breached his curfew. So a curfew was imposed on detainees who were released after this ruling. The government, as you might recall, passed emergency laws giving them the power to impose certain conditions on these individuals to monitor and keep track on them. Curfew was one of them. And this individual had repeatedly breached that curfew, and that was why he was in court at that time.
Mm. And now, you've got an update to this story relating to this alleged attack.
Yes, I do. So another one of, I guess, the powers that were given to Commonwealth authorities to monitor this cohort was the ability to fit them with electronic monitoring devices. Now, I have just learned and had it confirmed from the government that this individual was not wearing one of those monitoring devices. And the reason is that basically after the laws were passed last year, the government set up what's called the Community Protection Board. It's made up of Commonwealth Department officials and sort of law enforcement experts. And their job was to assess the cohort of former detainees to determine which of the conditions they should be subject to. They make an assessment of those individuals, what risk they pose to the community. They look at their history, they look at their past offences, their behaviour in detention or in custody, and determine, you know, what are the most reasonable conditions to be imposed on them. And the recommendation from that board in relation to this individual was that he didn't need to be fitted with an ankle monitoring device, and we've been able to confirm that decision today. So I'm sure that's going to spark a lot of debate. Certainly it will spark a lot of political debate about whether enough is being done to protect the community, and certainly these questions will be put to the government, where we're still yet to hear from Immigration Minister Andrew Giles or Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill, but these questions will certainly do certainly will be put to them when they eventually do surface.
Well, talking about that political debate, this detainee release debacle has been an embarrassment for the government. Another former detainee has been charged this week in Melbourne for breaching his curfew and for one count of failing to maintain his monitoring device. What is the opposition saying?
So this is, I think the opposition is just making the point that the government has not handled this competently. I think that's probably a polite way to describe the way that the opposition has characterised it. But we've seen a number of these instances now where former detainees have been rearrested and charged with breaching conditions, whether it's curfews, whether it's maintaining their monitoring device. And each time these, you know, notifications of these arrests and charges are made and it becomes public, the coalition is very quick to seize on this. They're making a lot of political mileage out of this issue, and the government, you know, this has been going on for months now, and every time the issue resurfaces, as it's done periodically over the past couple of months, the government has really struggled to get on the front foot and to be able to I guess clearly reassure the public and also to limit any political damage to them, which has been significant since, you know, really since November.
Yeah, talking about political damage, you know, Albo, you know, he's not putting out spot fires at the moment. He's basically living in a dumpster fire. We'll see what happens next. A federal politics reporter, Dan Jervis-Bardi, we appreciate your time on the Nightly Five.
Great. Thanks, mate.
Allegations of persistent and inappropriate behaviour towards staff has seen a Victorian MP booted from the Labor Party.
Yes, a man who has allegedly demonstrated persistent and repeated inappropriate behaviour towards female colleagues has been dumped by Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen. Allen axed South Barwon MP Darren Cheeseman from his position as the Parliamentary Secretary for Schools on Friday after revealing there had been a complaint about his behaviour from a member of staff. On Sunday, she defended her decision to keep Cheeseman in the Labor Party room. But late last night, the Premier released a statement confirming she had received new information about further allegations of inappropriate behaviour by Cheeseman towards another staff member. Speaking at a press conference today, Allen said her office had received the second complaint on Monday afternoon, but she'd been unable to act on it immediately as she'd been giving evidence at the Yuruk Justice Commission. She said the allegations were of a nature that don't require the involvement of Victoria Police, and she would not provide any information about the staffers involved. But the Vic Premier said everyone deserves the right to a safe and respectful workplace. In a statement on Facebook, Cheeseman said while he had resigned from the Labor Party room, he intended to remain in Parliament as an independent.
There are concerns this morning that interest rates could reach as high as 5% by year's end.
When it comes to interest rates, there's really only one question we care about: up or down. So any data point that may help us understand what the Reserve Bank is going to do is welcome. And today's example comes from the International Monetary Fund. Business reporter Adrian Lowe joins me in the studio. Adrian, what does the IMF think the RBA should do with interest rates?
Yeah, g'day Ben. They are recommending keep rates on hold for longer to keep inflation lower. And as we remember, that is what the RBA is trying to do by keeping rates up and keeping them on hold for some time. We've had those horrible run of interest rate rises since mid-2022 from 0.1%. Now we're at 4.35%. That only happened in the space of about 18 months, 2 years. So the pain that we're all feeling is probably likely to hang around a little bit longer, separate to the IMF's advice anyway. Most people had thought the RBA wasn't going to look at cutting rates until about November this year anyway, given we had that really hot inflation data that came out last week.
Yeah, like before that, I had been hopeful that rates would come down a little bit, not a lot, but I felt, you know, maybe just one. Just reduce them a little bit. Give us a quarter of a basis point, God's sakes. But so what is the IMF's thinking about the economy in Australia and more broadly in the region?
Well, this is the latest analysis is from their assessment of the Asia Pacific region. The IMF does these surveys about twice a year, and then each year takes an individual look at Australia's economy separately. Essentially, they're saying the biggest threat to our region at the moment is from China, the property market there, particularly in commodity heavy places of Australia like Western Australia. You will see that have a big impact if China's economy starts to come off the boil because of the demand for iron ore, and that's one of our biggest exports anyway. way. So people like Jim Chalmers are really sweating on these sorts of outcomes as they prepare the federal budget, which is coming up in about 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, and now we should preface this by saying this advice from the IMF as comes from the same people that thought it was a good idea to give Argentina more than $40 billion, so suckers. And so how do we interpret all of this? Is it good news? Is it bad news? It's kind of, it sounds grim, but also there's some silver lining here. It feels a bit like the IMF is serving us a shit sandwich.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to bear in mind here. One is that at the start of the year, the IMF was telling Australia to probably hike interest rates one more time. That would be putting up to about 4.6%. That seems a remote possibility now, not completely not a possibility, but it could. It seems one of the lesser likely possibilities. It's sort of ancillary noise. I think a lot of economists in Australia anyway were suggesting the RBA would be keeping rates on hold for some time. That has been extended down because of our higher inflation. Some are suggesting probably not even till early next year. But it does also suggest that the RBA will be watching to see what's going on. The other thing the IMF has recommended, which is quite interesting, is to say that you shouldn't necessarily follow the lead of the US Federal Reserve. And that's important because traditionally economists have thought, well, the US Fed leads the world, essentially. Well, if they do something, everyone else will go out. Inflation in the US has been much hotter than expected. So that means that if the conditions necessitate Australia doing something different, we should probably do it.
Yeah, bloody oath. If it means rates to go down, do whatever you can. Business reporter Adrian Lowe, we appreciate your insights. Thanks for joining us on the Nightly Five.
I got married late in life. I was 45. I had some issues. I was enjoying those issues quite a bit, as I recall. When I was single, I had married friends. I would not visit their homes. I found their lives to be pathetic and depressing. Now that I'm married, I have no single friends. I find their lives to be meaningless and trivial experiences. In both cases, I believe I was correct. Whichever side of marriage you're on, you don't get what the other people are doing. I can't hang out with single guys. If you don't have a wife, we have nothing to talk about. You have a girlfriend? That's wiffle ball, my friend. You're playing paintball war. I'm in Afghanistan with real loaded weapons.
Is political correctness ruining comedy? That's what comic icon Jerry Seinfeld reckons, but is he right? Or just another old bloke yelling at clouds? Culture editor Wenli Ma has some thoughts on that, and she joins me on the line now. Wenli, you've penned an excellent opinion piece in The Nightly today. What is Seinfeld carrying on about?
Well, Jerry Seinfeld has joined a whole cohort of his compatriots in thinking that apparently you can't be funny these days because the PC police and the extreme left are strangling comedy because I guess you can't offend people. You know what? I don't think you should, you know, aim to offend people being provocative just for being provocative's sake, which I think is kind of a funny thing coming from Jerry Seinfeld because he's never been known to be particularly edgy. Like, you know, his brand of comedy is usually observational about the mundane. So I'm not entirely sure where he's coming from, but he's not alone in this for sure.
If anything, I think he's got more provocative as he's gotten towards this sort of twilight stage of his career, the, you know, what you would call the grumpy old man stage. And it's this type of commentary that I think is being provocative around. In your column, you talk about punchdown comedy. It's become a bit of a buzz term in recent years. Dave Chappelle is a comedian who comes to mind when you're talking about punchdown comedy. How would you describe it?
Well, I think punchdown comedy to me is just, you know, making fun and light of someone who from a community that is more marginalized. Maybe it's LGBTQI people, maybe it's people with disabilities, other people from a different cultural background, and they're not in on the joke. The joke is against them, and it's just not really funny anymore because you hear it and you just go, oh, that's really sad that you think that's what kind of cuts for comedy. Whereas, you know, you can punch up at people who are in power, at, you know, the structures and institutions that sort of keep people in power, that don't share the power. And I think you do see quite a difference now between the comedy that used to fly, which, you know, was even things that we love, things like Friends, things like, I mean, even Seinfeld to a lesser extent. I mean, if you think about Friends, one of the big jokes in the show was that Chandler had a cross-dressing dad. I'm like, that's funny still? No, it's not. So, you know, you do get a lot of comedians now who say, that it's lazy. It's lazy comedy because you're just not challenging yourself to actually evolve and reframe your thinking. And I, you know, to me, like, stagnation is actually the real death of comedy and creativity, because if the joke never changes, it's no longer funny.
Yeah, so how would you contrast what Seinfeld is saying here to the likes of someone like Mike Schur, the guy who created hit sitcoms like Parks and Recreation and Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I mean, Mike Schur, I think, is a great example of someone who's always aimed to not do punch-down comedy, if you think of his shows. And I mean, and I should say that Jerry Seinfeld was specifically talking about TV sitcoms and TV comedy more than he was talking about stand-up. I mean, Mike Schur's shows are really funny. They're laugh out loud, high jokes per minute ratio comedies. They're not just like, you know, wry and observational and droll. And his stuff is warm-hearted. I mean, you do get characters who make fun of themselves, but they're doing it from a place of, you know, I'm in on this joke, I'm making this joke, but really what I'm joking about is not people like me, it's the people who are kind of in charge that puts us in these situations. I mean, if you think of Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they are so warm. They are like these great found family workplace comedies where people generally do try to be the best versions of themselves instead of being like nasty and mean.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point to make. And if you're looking at Seinfeld, you know, the temptation might be to go, well, you know, like this guy, he was in the iconic Seinfeld TV series. He surely knows what he's talking about. But as a colleague wisely pointed out to me today, you know, if you contrast comedians in cars getting coffee with, say, Curb Your Enthusiasm, maybe you have a different idea of who was the real comedic genius behind Seinfeld. But certainly, Wendley, it's a great column. I would encourage everybody to head to thenightly.com.au. And Wendley Maher, culture editor at The Nightly, we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, after weeks of speculation, it does seem as if the end of the road has finally come for Jason Demetriou. South Sydney's board is meeting this morning to decide the fate of their coach.
Yes, is it the end of the road for South's coach, Jason Demetriou? It's hard to know what's going on in Rabbitohs land because that assumed end is not coming as quickly as we thought. Joining me now with an update is sports editor at The Nightly, Ben McClellan. Mm. Ben, we've spoken about the Rabbitohs coach many, many times on The Nightly Five.
Yep.
It did look this morning as if the axe was about to fall. They had called a board meeting. They were going to discuss whether or not he would continue in the top job.
Mm.
And then the decision was deferred.
No decision.
No decision.
They've gone with a no. They need to go to the bunker. So, yeah, just, I mean, I don't know if this saga can have any more twists. So, I mean, we're all loving it in the media because obviously there's endless headlines. But, you know, all jokes aside, there, you know, is a person involved in this. And that's Jason Demetriou, who's, you know, living his own private hell very publicly at the moment. So, yeah, the South board met this morning. You know, the expectation was they would come out saying that he'd been sacked and Ben Hornby, the assistant coach, would step in. That's been deferred to a second board meeting, which is taking place after 5 p.m. tonight, because Nick Pappas, who's sort of the godfather of South Sydney Rugby League, he needs to be dialed in. So they're going to have essentially a second meeting at which they will decide Jason's future. Now, he exited training this morning, you know, very poetically. It was raining, pretty miserable sort of day in Sydney. He faced a media scrum as he came out of the South training park, fielded a few questions, which was good of him, you know, basically said there's not much he can do. It is what it is. He backed in the players, saying they'd been handling it well. There was some touching footage, photos that came out of Jack Whiten, who's one of the recruits that Jason brought in from Canberra, giving Jason a hug at training. But yeah, we hopefully should know more definitely by tomorrow, if not tonight. And guess who Souths are playing on Thursday?
Who?
Penrith. So that's a loss.
Yes, that's so, just pencil the double the so L in right there.
I mean, the school of thought is if they're going to sack him, just sack him. If they're going to have an interim coach for the rest of the season, then just make that happen so the team can adjust. Or otherwise, I guess, publicly back him in. But I just really can't see the latter as happening. As once the blood is in the water in modern sport for a coach, it is very rare that they survive.
Well, let's go back to what Nick Pappas said only a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
He told the Daily Telly that the first thing is we want Jason to succeed.
Yes.
Right? We want him to win. There's no doubt about that. We want him to succeed so he can carry the club through the rest of the season and his entire contract. And since then, they've lost.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean,
lost
the players might be with him and giving him hugs on the training park, but, you know, they're not making the tackles. They're not scoring the try. So whatever's happening at the club is not working. They've had, you know, Sam Burgess left last year. He was an assistant. There were question marks over of Demetriou and how he handled the coaching and, you know, claims of preferential treatment, particularly towards players like Latrell Mitchell. Mitchell's been nowhere because he's banned. He's obviously in his own furor, facing his own furor at the moment over a variety of issues, the latest being whether or he will play State of Origin or not. He apparently doesn't want to play, but now, you know, maybe sort of contractually obliged as an NRL player. It's just a complete mess.
Yeah, it is an absolute mess. If you had to bet your house on whether Demetriou survives, what have you done?
I'd bet my house that he won't survive.
Yeah, yes. I'm with you on
but
that.
But just like a little Monopoly house, yeah. Not like a proper house.
Because yeah, it's South, you just never know.
Because I actually just bought a house, so I don't really want to bet that. Would not go well with the family.
And now let's talk the other type of footy.
Yes.
Until they meet again, it's Storm. Still unbeaten in season 2024.
Yeah, that was the Mighty Cats knocking off the Blues on the weekend. Mm. And before that, there was a lot of hype building around Carlton. They had that huge come-from-behind win over GWS the week before. And so with that shine coming off, maybe people thought, oh, you know, maybe the Blues aren't the real deal.
Mm.
Not according to our star footy columnist, Lee Matthews.
Yeah. So Lee's produced yet another one of his great columns, which will be in the Nightly tonight, where he's canvassed a range of issues. One of the ones he's touched on, which I thought was very interesting, was he sort of gave us a bit of a breakdown of some of the teams after round seven and where they're at, the ones that have sort of caught his eye. One of them was Carlton. Like you said, they were, you know, very high hopes for them this year. They've done pretty well, but obviously they lost a pretty crucial match against Geelong, who are undefeated. But what Lee made the point of was that Carlton, in their losses the last couple of weeks, the teams against them have actually been kicking incredibly well. So they've been kicking at a strike rate of like 49 goals and 22 behinds, which is sort of unheard of in AFL for teams to kick that accurately. So he's saying he thinks there's a bit of lady luck not favouring the Blues. Also, they probably need to do a few things in defence to stop letting teams get, you know, marks in good positions to kick easy goals. And he says once they cut that down and lady luck starts to favour them a bit more in terms of, you know, shots that, you know, go a little wide of the goal, that they'll win those big matches and they will be a contender for the 2024 flag. I'll quickly segue to Geelong. He had some very interesting insights on Geelong as well. You know, they won the 2022 Premiership. Everyone had written them off a little bit because they sort of fell in a heap last year. They're definitely up and about this year. And one of the reasons he's pointed out is there's a sort of slew of young cats which are really bringing the team, giving them a second win, so to speak. He made the point of Ollie Henry is playing this sort of great role where he's sort of complementing Tom Hawkins up front, and that's allowing Jeremy Cameron, who stands at nearly 200 centimetres tall, to basically rove up and down the field, and has sort of changed the way he's playing and has just made him a lethal weapon for Geelong. So, yeah, so there's some really interesting insights there. He also talks about the Anzac Day round, what that means for the AFL and some of the discrepancies between the games there, and what the Anzac Day round means for some players and others, and the opportunities that the players in the smaller clubs are just never going to get if you don't play for, say, the Collingwoods or the Essendons.
Yeah, to get those big marquee games under their belts. Yeah, another great column from Lee Matthews, which you can get in the digital edition by heading to thenightly.com.au. And we thank you, as always, Ben McClellan, sports editor of The Nightly. And that, folks, is today's show. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join me tomorrow on The Nightly 5.
The Nightly 5 podcast is brought to you by Seven West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au, helping you get in front of tomorrow.